What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points, proudly brought to you by the Tainus Hoopers family and the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jake Painting. As usual, you can find me over on at Twitter at Jake Painting, JakePaynting. Today, we're just going to do some general housekeeping for some Wolves stuff. We'll go over some draft and free agency rumors. We'll do some draft prototypes that kind of I think we should be looking at. And then we'll get into a little bit of finals talk and a few comparisons with the Los Angeles Lakers and the Miami Heat that might relate back to the Timberwolves in the future. To do all that with me today is Jack Borman, Tainus Hoopers contributor, the great man himself. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Just another day in this paradise that they call the United States of America. Just a living embodiment of the dog surrounded by fire. It's fine, meme.
Yeah, it's. I don't think the Twitter timeline's been popping, you know, like it did after the Donald Trump news for quite some time.
Shout out to Shams too, by the way. My guy leveled up. I think, I don't know. Are we taking him over Woj now with that?
I think at some point when you start breaking presidential news, you've definitely hit the top rung of reporters.
Yeah, it was just, he's got the clutch gene. That's all I'm going to say with Shams. He's got the clutch gene.
Yeah, so to start it off with today, we'll get into some draft rumors to begin with. The first one is Jonathan Wasserman of Bleacher Report. He's reporting over there that he's heard from scouts that LaMelo Ball will likely be the pick over Anthony Edwards for the Timberwolves if they do decide to keep it, if they can't find a deal to move the number one pick. They feel confused after messing up and trading up for Jarrett Culver last season. The article also mentioned that scouts are worried about Anthony Edwards' drive and his enthusiasm for winning, which likely means he'll be passed on by Golden State at number two if Minnesota do pass on him as well. I think I've got some thoughts on this. I want to know your thoughts. I know that you haven't always been the biggest LaMelo Ball proponent, but I think I'd really like to hear your thoughts on the Anthony Edwards stuff and what you would think of LaMelo Ball eventually ending up with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, so I wasn't totally surprised when I heard the Anthony Edwards side of it, just because I think that we've kind of seen a lot of comps from for Anthony Edwards to Ben Simmons, which I think is interesting, just because they both went to SEC schools that are not known to be good basketball schools whatsoever in LSU and Georgia, respectively. They both kind of went there just to hang out for a year, to be the guy, to have it be their own show, and just kind of be able to do whatever they want on the floor. While you know, being the presumptive number one pick in the draft. And obviously Ben Simmons has figured that out, and I think that there's not really too many people that question his drive. And I think kind of being linked with LeBron James, like if LeBron's taking you under his wing, I don't think he's just doing that if you don't have some type of drive in you. So I kind of understand that comp to Ben Simmons a little bit. But with Anthony Edwards, it just kind of looked like he was okay with losing and didn't really care that Georgia just kept losing close games and letting things slip away in the last 5 to 7 minutes of second halves of games. And it really wouldn't surprise me to see him drop to 3 or 4. But there's no doubt in my mind that Anthony Edwards is the most talented guy in this draft and has the highest ceiling of any guy in this draft, either him. In terms of ceiling, it's either him or Wiseman. And then as it relates to LaMelo, I'm just so out on LaMelo in terms of going to Minnesota, just because he's not good enough without the ball in his hands to make things work playing on the floor with D'Angelo Russell. And I understand that, you know, we want D'Lo to be off the ball, and I think D'Lo is certainly comfortable playing off the ball to a certain extent, but I just don't think that LaMelo is going to be able to play with D'Lo simply because they're both terrible defenders. You'd hope that because of LaMelo's vision and his vision and his offensive IQ are so high that some of that would translate to the defensive end of the floor, but we just haven't seen it, and the effort simply is not there. But I'm not putting too much stock into, you know, who would the Wolves take number one overall, simply just because I don't think the Wolves are going to be making a selection at number one overall. And if they do end up making a selection at number one overall, I think the chances that they actually end up trading that selection, whether it be on draft night or shortly thereafter, are very, very high. I would probably give it a 10 or 15% chance maybe of the Timberwolves staying at number one, making a selection, and then holding on to that selection. And then the last thing I'll say here in my little ramble is just that I didn't really understand the whole the Timberwolves are confused or, you know, what was the thing? It says Minnesota sounds confused and feels pressure after they messed up last year by trading for Culver. I think there's an argument to be made there for messing up trading for Culver just because he was unplayable for stretches of the year for literally the worst team in the NBA. And that's saying something for a guy that you trade up for with number six overall. Like, I know that Saric was gone anyways, but still, I mean, you could have taken Cam Reddish, you could have taken Kobe White, guys who I think are going to be far better players than Jarrett Culver when it's all said and done. But Culver too probably doesn't really fit in a super up and down pace and space game. I think he fits more in kind of a slower grinded out system where he doesn't need to, you know, be able to launch threes at a crazy clip. But the whole messing up with Culver and now feeling confused this year, I with how smart the front office is, I'm not putting a whole lot of stock into that.
Yeah, I think it's silly season. So all of this stuff, I mean, I think Wasserman himself is definitely getting this stuff from sources, so I don't think he's making things up by any means. He's definitely a credible draft guy, and I do like a lot of the draft stuff that he does, but I think at this stage, a lot of his sources are probably just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks. Like, it's an easy bridge to cross to say, oh, you know, they're under pressure, they feel like they messed up trading for Culver because he was quite bad in his first season, and then I think it's also easy to say, like, look, they don't want Anthony Edwards, they want LaMelo Ball, because at the end of the day, you've probably got a 50-50 chance that if they do keep that pick, they're going to take one of those guys. So it seems to me like it's all kind of just noise at the moment. There's a lot of smoke screens going on. It's definitely silly season. And to be honest, I've warmed on LaMelo Ball a lot. Not necessarily LaMelo Ball to the Timberwolves, but I've definitely warmed on LaMelo Ball just as a player in general. But I think that it's completely reasonable to question his drive and his, you know, enthusiasm for winning as well. I mean, he was on a terrible team in Australia, which is obviously an easier league. He didn't seem to impact winning whatsoever. He still, you know, seemed pretty comfortable losing. He wanted to throw up, you know, 40-foot threes with 19 seconds left on the shot clock. So I think there's no real win-win situation with this draft, especially at the top. And I think they both harbour, you know, questions about their intensity and their effort and whether they can contribute to a winning team right away. And that's the risk some team's going to have to take on one of them two guys and a lot of other guys in this draft who just don't seem like they are the kind of players who will live up to, you know, a top five or a top 10 pick. But That's the way the draft is. I still think Edwards is the better fit. I think he's got the higher ceiling, and I think if all breaks right, he's the kind of prototype, which we'll get into in a second. But he's the kind of prototype that wins in the NBA, which is a big wing or a big guard who can still handle the ball a bit, pass a bit, and then obviously get his own as a scorer. So I think at the moment, or you take every rumor on the draft with a grain of salt and kind of just keep it moving.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. Lucas C. Hafer of A Wolf Among Wolves put out Gerse's full quote about, you know, kind of about the draft evaluation process and what Wasserman had to say. And he said, quote, "I would be very leery of what's out there right now. It's a season of smoke screens and rumors and secondhand information that don't really have any concrete foundation to it."
Right, yeah.
And then he followed that up by saying, "We go through all the players that we deem as draftable players. We'll evaluate because the draft is very fluid. We're at 1, 17, and 33, but a trade can change that in a heartbeat. We've got to be able to be prepared to jump in on the board at any moment and pick the players that are going to be best available for us at any point." End quote. So I thought that what Gerse said was good there, but I do think that when you look at kind of the rest of the league in a sense and what they have to think, I think it'll be really interesting to see what Golden State does. Obviously, I think they're going to trade, but for some reason, if they end up staying at two, it would be really interesting to see who they decided to go with and kind of like what their view is, just because I think that they've kind of become a measuring stick for draft evaluation. They haven't been quite as good in the last couple of years, but that front office is just so damn smart, and I think a lot of people kind of look to them as the model example of kind of what to think about these prospects. And I thought it was interesting that the words kind of come out that they're not really high on either LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards. And I don't think that's just because, you know, this draft isn't great or whatnot. I think it's just that those two still have so many question marks as prospects. And I think I think it's just going to be really interesting to see who trades up and wants to take a bet on either of these two guys. And to be honest with you, I would rather roll the dice and trust, you know, Rosas and Sachin Gupta to, you know, work out some type of trade to move down and acquire future assets, or just go all in and try and get a Ben Simmons, even if it costs D'Lo or someone like that. Just because I trust them more to work the trades and net a positive yield through trades than they do through the draft. But we'll see on that. So,
yeah, I agree with you, and I still think the most likely situation is that they trade down and they don't bring back a really, you know, sexy big name player in the trade, but they get themselves an asset for the future, maybe a 21 pick, or maybe, you know, a veteran player who can still give you 25 to 30 minutes a game, and then get a pick that's still in the top 10, maybe like the, you know, 6 to 10 range, or maybe even like the 11 to 15 range, and you get yourself a decent pick next year. I still think that's the most likely scenario, but I also am beginning to think that them keeping the pick is more likely than I gave it credit for at the start, just because I'm not 100% sure. Obviously, I don't know any inside information about this, but I'm not 100% sure if the deal that gets proposed to them or a deal that someone will accept will be up to the standard that they want. And I do think that they are comfortable taking someone if they have to, because if you take Anthony Edwards and he turns out to be really good, then you can either keep him or you can flip him again. And I just think that, which is a good thing for me, because I don't think that they're going to just take a deal for the sake of taking a deal and bring in a player just because they're worried about, you know, messing up again or anything like that. I just think that they will take the best player available. If they think that Anthony Edwards is better than anything that they can get, then I think they'll take him, and I'm starting to believe that might be a little bit more likely than what I first gave it credit for.
Yeah, and I think, too, it'll be interesting to see if Gerson kind of calls the bluff of the fire that Doogie kind of started with the whole Cat's as good as gone thing. I think it's going to be interesting to see how that affects the way that this front office operates, because I think coming into this draft process after the season, I think we were all kind of expecting the Timberwolves to take things slow and not feel any pressure to have to win right away or make any short-sighted moves or try and make the biggest swing possible, whether it be, you know, foregoing just a ton of assets down the road to try and get a Booker or a Beal or a Simmons or someone like that. Because you know, when you talk about, you know, I think it's more likely that the Wolves end up taking a Ball or an Edwards. To me, that says that the Wolves are more comfortable with losing more games this upcoming season. Because, you know, I think Ball and Edwards are two, you know, terrifically talented players, but I just don't know how much they're going to contribute.
They're not gonna be good next season.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to move the needle that much next season. I think how far the needle is moved next season, I think, will have a lot to do with A, Jarrett Culver and Josh Okogie's shooting is the primary thing for me. Has the offensive game for each of those guys evolved to a point where you can just get good ancillary shooting and you can at least provide some type of offensive punch when they're out there with the bench unit? Because if it's not, then I think you're going to have to bring Beasley off the bench and just let him cook. Let him cook with the bench, to be honest. But going back to my original point, you know, who knows? Maybe Rosas has had a bunch of conversations with Kat, and Kat feels really good about one of these prospects and wants to see it through with a baller in Edwards or a Wiseman or Killian Hayes or whomever it may be. But yeah, I still just can't imagine this team would hold on to the number one pick. Just because I think that, you know, and I was talking with Dane about this too, is like the Wolves were handed a gift. We all expected them to have 7 or 8. And what are you going to do with the gift? Are you going to just like try and get a marginally better player in a baller in Edwards compared to a Hayes or a Vassell? Or are you going to try and turn that newfound asset into more? And I think trying to turn it into more just makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. And when I say that I think it's more likely, I still don't think it's the likeliest situation. And I don't think it's the one that I prefer. But I don't know, something inside me just feels like one of them guys is going to end up on Minnesota, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. I do like them both in the long term, but like you said, they won't be better next year. They'll probably be better just because the guys who are already on the roster will improve.
Plus,
but,
you'll have
but
Kat
Anthony
playing
Edwards alone.
I think, I mean, people forget that we had to watch fucking Jeff Teague and Alan Crabb and Travion Graham and, oh, what a nightmare.
Yeah. So they're definitely going to be better than, you know, a 22-win team or whatever they were on pace for this season before the season shut down. But I don't think that – I think if anyone's expecting Anthony Edwards or Melo Ball to come in and be Ja Morant or, you know, that level of player where they instantly can turn a team around and be a plus on both ends, I think that's getting ahead of yourself a little bit, because both of those guys are going to be significant – minuses on defense immediately, and very streaky offensive players who will probably show flashes, you know, of being really good and have games where you're like, wow, you know, Anthony Edwards is going to be a really good player. But then when you watch him on a nightly basis, he's probably going to be one of those guys who are really frustrating and he's going to need time to grow. I think Anthony Edwards will end up a really good player, not a superstar, maybe not even a star, but I do have faith that he'll be a good player. But it's not going to be in year one.
Yeah, I think something else that's going to be interesting to monitor, or that you have to think about, is like with Ball and Edwards, it's not like coming into a situation in Minnesota, like it'll be okay for them to just be shitty on defense. Like the Wolves are so bad on defense to a point where you almost can't afford to bring in more negative defenders, and then just say, oh, well, then we'll just have to trade Josh Okogie and Jarrett Culver to go get another offensive stock, like superstar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that,
and that's why it's the opposite to a lot of places that high draft picks normally get taken as well, because offensively it is the opposite. Like they are able to come in and play through their mistakes a little bit and play in a lesser role because you have Towns and Russell and Beasley and guys like that. But then defensively, like you pretty much need to be at least an average defender, or you're just going to make the team worse immediately, no matter what, no matter how good the offense is around you.
And that's why you just trade down and draft Isaac Okoro and never look back. I just...
Yeah. I've got all Isaac Okoro thoughts today that we'll get into as well.
Oh, boy, do we have Okoro thoughts. I can't wait.
So we'll move on from the draft just for a minute, and then we'll get back into it a little bit after this. But more rumors flying around. Obviously, there's the Ben Simmons stuff. Rashad Phillips, who's known for his questionable takes and his questionable sourced information. But the one that is kind of doing the rounds today is from Legion Hoops Ross, who runs the page Legion Hoops. I'm not 100% sure how reliable he is or not. Like, obviously, all this stuff is kind of subjective unless it's, you know, Shams or Woj or Mark Stein or something like that. So he has said Minnesota will express interest in Nets three-point assassin Joe Harris in free agency per a source. I think obviously, we were just discussing this off-air, obviously I think they'll definitely have interest in him. I think a lot of team, every team almost around the league who can afford him will have interest in him. My question is, can they afford him? Is he a mid-level exception guy? Probably in this market. I think he probably gets a little bit less than someone like Beasley just because he's a bit older. I think he's obviously a great three-point shooter. I'm not sure whether he's the guy I would really want them to spend the mid-level exception on. Not that he's not a really good player and that he wouldn't make this team better, but I just think back to what we were just talking about before is that at some point you need to spend money or assets or resources on guys who really make a difference defensively. And I think Joe Harris is not a turnstile. I think he's not a terrible, terrible defender, but he's also not a guy who...
I don't think he's a plus defender. Yeah. I don't think he's a minus defender, which is certainly an upgrade from you know, a Malik Beasley or an Andrew Wiggins or, you know, a Jarrett Culver or Jeff Teague on the wing, at least right now. And I don't know. I think about it this way with Joe Harris. I would be all in on throwing the full mid level at Joe Harris, just because I think, you know, when you start looking at guys that you could potentially throw the full mid level at, I mean, the list is just so small in my opinion. Like Marcus Morris is going to go play for a contender. Mason Plumlee is a guy that would be interesting to bring here, but isn't likely to fetch much money. Like Jordan Clarkson, do you want to bring him in, or Solomon Hill, or a Mo Harkless, or you know a Myers Leonard? Like some of these other guys, just like aren't going to be as marginally impactful as a Joe Harris could be. And I think that if you bring in a guy like Joe Harris, I would start Joe Harris without a doubt. I'd play him next to D'Lo because of the history that those two have, and the lineups with those two in the lineup. We're not terrible defensively, whatsoever. Which I think was really interesting because, you know, when you have a guy like D'Angelo Russell playing at the point of attack and you see just kind of this chunky white guy at the two, that just shoots threes. Like you wouldn't exactly think that guys like that would be able to hold their own defensively. But here, let me pull it up really quick. I have it in front of me here. I just have to find it super quick with these two guys.
And while you're doing that, it's, I think the difference between him and Beasley is that obviously I think Harris is a bit more, technically sound, but also the size. Like, I'm not sure off the top of my head how big Joe Harris is, but Beasley's 6'4", 6'5" at the most. So. Yeah. Like that extra few inches you get from Harris at the two guard is really important, you know, whether he is this athletic freak or not. Like, Beasley's athletic, but Harris is longer and more sound.
Yeah, Harris is 6'6", 220. So, I mean, he's beefier,
that's,
too.
That's a big... That's a big two guard.
Right, and so I have it here in front of me per cleaning the glass. Any lineup that featured Harris and D'Angelo Russell last year, offensively they're in the 80th percentile in effective field goal percentage, and they were in the 41st percentile offensively at 109 points per 100 possessions. On defense, they were in the 57th percentile with 110 points per 100 possessions, and they were in the 93rd percentile in terms of free throw rate. I think a lot of that probably has to do with the fact that Jared Allen was playing out there with them. But but even if that comes down to like the 65th or 70th percentile, I mean, that's still a huge hike up for the Wolves.
And to be in the mid-50s, you know, in defensive efficiency, like that's, even no matter who's around you, like that's a really good outcome for a Harris and Russell backcourt.
Yeah, and I mean, the best lineup that the two of them were involved in was a lineup that featured Russell, Allen Crabb, Joe...
Who's been washed on defense for
years. Yeah, Joe Harris, and then Rhonda Hollis-Jefferson and Jarrett Allen. Who's another guy that I think the Wolves should try and trade for, but that's a different conversation.
Hollis-Jefferson or Allen?
Allen. My main point was that Harris is not as bad of a defender as a lot of people would think he is, and he and D'Lo were just so dangerous together offensively. And then if you could, if you could trot out a lineup that featured D'Angelo Russell, Joe Harris, Malik Beasley, Josh Okogie, and Cat, I think that would be one fun lineup. Because, I mean, Josh is what, 6'4", 6'5"?
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's got like a 6'10 wingspan. And, I mean, he just plays way bigger way than big, he is. Yeah, he's got a 7-foot wingspan. He plays way bigger than he is. And I think Josh could guard a 4. I don't think Josh would get killed. I mean, if you want to post up a 4 guy on Josh Okogie and that's going to be your offense, I say good luck. I say have fun doing that. And I'll let you do that.
Yeah. Unless it's a really big dude, like unless you're playing too big.
Yeah, obviously that.
Like
yeah.
if you're playing a 6'7", 6'8", 6'9" guy at the four, like a lot of teams do, you know, 85% of teams are playing those big wings at the four. Like Josh can easily take one of those guys, and he's proved time and time again that on the perimeter he'll be able to handle them comfortably, and then in the post he'll at least hold his own. And teams aren't running post ups as a as a way to win games. Like, they might run one occasionally here and there to try and get an easy bucket
in the playoffs,
on Okogie because he's smaller. But like, no team during the regular season is running post-ups as their main playset.
Yeah, unless you've got, like, an offensive, you know, fulcrum at the center spot, like a Jokic or a Davis or someone like that, or a Bam Adebayo. But even then, like, I think they'd be matched up on Cat, and that wouldn't be something that you'd have to worry about with Josh. And who knows? I mean, if Josh's shooting is improved, it'd be hard for it not to improve. You know, I think that becomes a really dangerous offensive lineup and one that I definitely think they should keep an eye on, just because, you know, if there's a place that Harris is going to go that isn't to a contender, I think Minnesota would probably be near the top of the list, just because... You know, we have sign and trade options. I'd be fine giving up Jake Lehman or giving up, you know, James Johnson in a deal to trade like 17-33 James Johnson for like Jared Allen and Joe Harris. Like, I would do that. And that's an interesting idea. I think that the Timberwolves have options there. And given his familiarity with D'Lo and Pablo Prigioni, who is a development coach out there in Brooklyn that both Harris and Russell have given a ton of credit to publicly. I think it would be fun for sure. And you can never have too much shooting. So, And like I said, moves like that, I think, are going to depend a lot on what the development of Jared Culver and Josh Okogie has turned into. If they're confident
that one or both of those guys are going to shoot at a league average level, I think you'll see them try and get guys who are more defensively minded, just because they obviously need defense. But there comes to a point where you can't run, like you can't really run like this version of Josh Okogie, Jared Culver, and like Derek Jones Jr. in the same lineup, just because the team only just became a team that shoots threes well. Yep. It would be pretty counterproductive just to immediately take all of that shooting away and focus on defense, because then you're just middling in both areas. Like, they're never going to be a great defensive team because they're the bookends are both bad at defense. But you need to find that happy medium where you have some defensive minded players, but you also need them to contribute offensively so that you can tread water there as well and kind of be a decent team on both
ends. And that's why I think you're going to see Josh Okogie and Jared Culver probably spread out. Like, I don't think Jared Culver is going to start. I would be shocked if he did, and I think Josh is going to start.
And I think they won't really play a lot of minutes together.
I would agree with that. And that's kind of another reason why I'd advocate for a guy like Okoro if the Wolves feel confident in those two guys' shooting abilities moving forward, just because... I mean, he does so many things for you on defense, but I mean, he's so good without the ball in his hands when he's on offense, and we can get into it later. But
and he's good just with the ball, and if it's not shooting, he's good. Like, he is a ridiculously good slasher and a really good passer for his size.
If he becomes the 35-37% shooter, there's no doubt in my mind that he will be the best player from this draft.
I've moved him up to 4 on my board, and that's the exact reason why, because even if he only gets to 33%, he's still going to impact the game in a lot of ways and potentially be like an all-defense guy. Like, he's that good defensively.
I think he's going to be a weapon. He's going to end up being a weapon in the playoffs by, like, the time he's a third or fourth-year guy in the league.
And even with a low free throw percentage, like, he's going to get to the line so much because he's so strong and he's a really good finisher. Like, if you don't foul him, he will finish. Yeah,
and I mean,
so,
he was like a top 50 guy coming out of high school. And he spent 1 year at Auburn, which isn't exactly like a big powerhouse basketball program. I think that's another thing that people kind of need to think about when you're evaluating some of these draft prospects, is like, what's the school they've came from? What type of development coaches do they have? You know, how big of a basketball program is it? Like, getting him in an NBA strength and conditioning program, plus having him constantly work on, you know, those little skills like free throw shooting or something like that, I think is going to be huge. But my main takeaway is that, you know, I don't think there's a ton of guys out there that you could sign for that full MLE that would fit in right away as well as Joe Harrison. Because of his fit, I think that he would move the needle more than some of those other names. But the other thing I was going to mention is that I totally do get the argument for wanting to split that up into two guys, whether it be like a Derrick Jones Jr. and a Myers Leonard or someone like that. So.
Yeah, I think if there's one guy who's, like, while Jeremy Grant's stock has gone way out of the Minnesota's reach, I think if there's one guy whose stock has dropped, it's probably Jones Jr. Just he can barely get on the court right now in the playoffs.
Kelly Olynyk.
Still a really good, so he might be a guy that during the season one would have thought maybe he gets the full MLE because he's still young and he's proving to be a really good defender and a capable, you know, slasher and rim runner. But now maybe he gets $6 million a year or $7 million a year, and you can kind of give a little bit of that MLE to someone else. And that, I think that would still be the dream scenario. If you could get like a Mo Harkless and a Derrick Jones Jr., like, that's hitting it out of the park, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just we'll transition into the draft prototypes, just because that's where I want to talk about with Okoro. And I think Canis Hoopers' own Tyler Metcalf, he wrote an interesting and informative piece on the Jeremy Grant situation and how he's probably, you know, played his way out of Minnesota's price range. And the idea is that you still want to get someone who can cover that backside defensively, like as a rotation defender, and hold their own as much as possible on smaller fours and on switches, and then obviously contribute offensively either as a shooter or a rim runner or a slasher. He floated names like Precious Achiuwa and Paul Reed, who we've talked about Reed before. We haven't really talked about Achiuwa. Both I'm skeptical on, but I do see the upside and the fit within that prototype that we're looking at here. But I think Okoro might be the guy more than all of those other guys. Like, I know he's only 6'6", but I think Okoro as a four really works, and he could fill a lot of gaps defensively. Like, we don't have to spend too much time talking about it because we just did, but I just think Okoro as a four, a small ball four, works a lot better than people will give credit for, just because of the height that he has.
Yeah, and I think he does so many things off the ball, which are great too, like between tagging and sliding in on pick and rolls and doing that type of stuff, or digging was what I was looking for. I think are really important. Like, you and I know we're going to talk later about Miami and LA. Like, one thing that both of those teams do extremely well, even a guy like Tyler Hero has learned how to do it from just year one, not even in the Miami system, is tagging off the ball in the pick and roll, which I think is extremely important. Just to have
very,
that kind
very
of
important
communication and conversation with your big and whoever's with you on the backside. It is crucial, and I think that Okoro is a guy who's proven that he can do that at an extremely high level at Auburn and fly around curls and block guys at the rim. I just love everything about him as a prospect, and I think if you're looking for a guy that absolutely has that drive, when you're on defense, I want to like kill this guy at the rim, or I want to totally clamp this guy up, or really just become the best possible version of himself that he can be. He's the one guy that I would bet on to be really good, and he absolutely feeds off of crowd energy and totally gets the crowd going. And between him and Josh Okogie, if you like Josh Okogie, I'd encourage you to go watch Isaac Okoro because he's a ton of fun. And I think he already right now has higher offensive upside than J.O. does. But he's
size probably gives him more defensive upside as well, just because he can probably guard 1 through 4. Like, he guarded a lot of point guards at Auburn, especially, you know, when they played a team with a really good point guard. Like, he's guarded Kyra Lewis, he guarded Tyrese Maxey in the game I was just watching the other day against Kentucky. Like, there wasn't a matchup that he shied away from or that he didn't
laterally as well.
Oh, which is
incredible. I mean, you add in the fact that he's, you know, 215, 220 pounds, and he's still lightning quick laterally. I mean, his frame is NBA ready. And you throw that in with the agility that he has and the quick first step and burst he has off the dribble too when he's got the ball in his hands is insane. Like, I just picture him coming off of flex cuts and D'Lo just throwing the ball and him just throwing down on people.
Yeah, and he's really, like, that intrigues me so much, the thought of him playing off the ball and jetting to the rim with D'Lo, who really loves to find cutters. I know that he gets a lot of praise for his pick and roll ball handling, pick and roll passing, but I think Russell is just as adept at finding cutters, especially on those back cuts and on those flex cuts, like you said. And Okoro will not stop cutting all game. I think the Okoro comparison is apt in that kind of sense, where they just do shit, guys. Like, they do things that help winning basketball, and they know how to win without stepping outside their comfort zone. Like, he's not going to shoot 6 threes a game and miss them all. Like, he might shoot 1 or 2 threes a game and maybe not hit either of them because he's not a great shooter, but he knows what he does well, and he does it often, and I really like that.
Yeah, and he plays within himself too. Like, I think that he's so, like, the thing that I think about too when I'm thinking about these prospects is, what totally take it to the bank skill do they have that's automatically going to translate, that they can rely on when things are not going their way, whether it be shooting the ball or playing defense or whatever. And you think about Jarrett Culver, right? What is Jarrett Culver's bankable skill that he has that just, like, automatically would translate from college to the pros? There isn't.
And I think it was the, like, coming out of college, because it's definitely not the fact now, is that I think the thing people thought was that he finished at the rim really well, and he does those little quick, you know, layup shots where he kind of just gets into the rim and quickly flicks it up. Like, they looked really ugly this year, and they just didn't go in.
Yeah,
but, like, at Texas Tech, they went in all the time.
Yeah, and my main point was just that Culver doesn't have that bankable skill. And Okoro...
Yeah, like, because that's still iffy when you get to the next level, whether you can do that through bigger defenders and stronger, where, like, Okoro is an NBA-ready defender, flat stick. That's
And the one thing that I was gonna mention on Okoro is, like, yeah, I think that he's going to be a guy who's going to be a positive defender right away, but on offense, I do think he has that bankable skill of his really aggressive and explosive slashing and cutting ability. I think,
and he's a great finisher. Like, awesome, he's a legitimately great finisher around the rim with both hands through contact. Like, he's not your prototypical, you know, guy who does everything on defense and nothing on offense. Like, around the rim, he will score.
Yeah, and you put him with a guy like Pablo Prigioni, who has those chops as a development coach and has unlocked the best out of D'Angelo Russell and Joe Harris and Caris LeVert, to name a few guys. Like, I totally trust him to help take Isaac Okoro's game to the next level. And I think the fact that he's got the work ethic and he's got the explosiveness and he's always locked in and looking to put pressure on the defense when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, is just kind of a coach's, you know, dream foundation to build off of. I, you know, with how lazy defenders are in the NBA, especially off the ball, he's going to make people pay. And if he's playing with a point guard like D'Lo, there's no doubt in my mind that D'Lo is going to find him more often than not.
Yeah, and I think the only bad thing there is that there's no chance they take him at one, and there's no chance that he falls to 17. So he's really only the kind of guy that ends up in Minnesota if a trade down scenario unfurls.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, maybe the Wolves, and again, it comes down to, you know, how do you get the most value out of the number one pick? And in my opinion, like, yeah, let's say Chicago wanted to jump up to number one, right? What is Chicago picking? Four? Five?
Yeah.
I think four. Cool. So Chicago's picking fourth. Okoro would absolutely be there at four. I think that if, you know, we swapped with Chicago and they maybe gave us, like, Wendell Carter or someone like that, and number four.
Yeah, I don't think it has to be that much for it to be a good deal. Like, if you get any positive asset, like, the difference between Okoro and Anthony Edwards is slim, if any. Like, it's just public perception that there's a real difference, I think.
Yeah, but you look at, like, just his attitude, his just, like, drive and the dog inside of him. I mean, that is way more evident in Okoro than it is in Anthony Edwards. And Anthony Edwards' biggest bankable skill is his shot creation and his offense. Like, I think that Okoro's, like, defense is going to be far more positive right away than Anthony Edwards' offense would be, which is another way that I think about
for sure.
I don't know. I mean, I would love for Okoro to, like, go to Golden State at two. I mean, that'd be kind of a huge nuts on the table move by the Warriors to take a guy
and
like
that. And they're the team that I think if anyone's going to just prioritize fit over best player available, it's just going to be Golden State. And they're just going to be like, look, we've got a great team and we're just going to swing for the fences with a guy who can help us over the next 2 years immediately rather than planning for a post-Steph or post-Clay future, because that'll happen down the road.
Yeah, but if they went small with, like, Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Okoro, and Draymond,
that's a great
that'd
team,
be
man.
So
even with Wiggins,
so much fun. Oh man,
yeah. So that kind of how you were talking about Edwards, that's the other thing I think that Minnesota need to try and find in this draft is a shot creator and another ball handler. Obviously, both of us have raved about how well Jordan McLaughlin played with D'Angelo Russell and how much better the team offense operates when you have two guys who can run pick and roll, who can find cutters, and also who can score for themselves. And I think Edwards is still the first guy that comes to mind there, just because he's right, obviously, in Minnesota's range. Well, everyone's in their range, but, like, he's one of the top picks that are on most guys' boards. And I think, like you said, he's off the dribble creation would definitely add another element to this team's offense. Like, I love Malik Beasley, but he doesn't really create for himself off the dribble. He's a kind of guy who needs someone to create for himself, or he can step into a, you know, two dribble pull up. But Edwards is the kind of guy who can pull the ball back out and in a secondary pick and roll or inside pick and roll and actually initiate offense. And I think it'll take some time before he can really grasp, you know, where to pass and who to pass to. But he flashed more than a few really, really high-level reads at Georgia. And that's for a team whose spacing and whose just teammates in general were really poor. But I think he's the guy that sticks out to me. Killian Hayes is obviously the guy that sticks out to me even more, because he's number one on my board. I just don't see Minnesota taking him if they stay at number one, but he's a great shot creator and a great, you know, initiator and passer. I think there's a few other guys. Ball's obviously a wonderful creator, great touch around the rim as well. And I'm really high on Cole Anthony's ability to become a very impressive shot creator and someone who Minnesota should absolutely snap up if he falls to 17. But are there guys in the draft that you see that you think could come in and be that ball handler, shot creator, whether it's next to D'Lo or behind him, or someone who can just chew up, you know, some usage as a ball handler?
Yeah, the first guy that pops to my head is Kira Lewis Jr. from Alabama. Kira is probably my second favorite point guard in the draft behind Killian Hayes. I have LaMelo probably third behind those guys, just because... Yeah. You know, I think that Killian's athleticism really does not put a ceiling on his game. I think He's got a fantastic shot form. His base and just his whole body balance is great. Shooting, he's really strong finishing at the rim with either hand, through contact, over contact, or around contact. He really in his sophomore season, he really did a better job of kind of learning how to play within his athleticism a little bit. You could tell his freshman year that he just had so much athleticism. He just really wasn't he just couldn't control himself really. And I think he kind of learned better body control and kind of exhibited that more in his sophomore year, as well as some different dribble combos into shots like step backs and side steps and stuff like that that I thought was really impressive. And is just a guy who can absolutely push the pace and transition and just put a ton of pressure on the defense. If anybody's fallen asleep or if he's got a good switch on to him, he's a guy who I think could probably average 12 to 14 or 15 points a game coming off the bench. I struggle to see a lot of bench players that would be able to guard him effectively, just because he's that athletic and that quick off the dribble, to a point where I think he could get into the lane and finish or draw fouls or kick it out to open shooters. And again, kind of goes back to my whole Joe Harris thing. Like, you have a guy like Joe Harris that allows you to push somebody like Malik Beasley to the bench or like a Josh Okogie to the bench, which I think would just allow your bench to score more points and just provide more of an offensive
threat. Just having more good players is
exactly
good.
And I think DeKira would make life easier for a lot of other guys, especially shooters that he'd play with in the second unit, which is intriguing. He's only 19, so he's 6'3". He's got a 6'3 wingspan. He's got a pretty small frame. I think he's only like 170 pounds, but definitely a guy that I would trust to put some weight on that frame and not really lose much of his athleticism, just because he's definitely the most athletic guy in this draft, in my opinion. And outside of him, I really like Desmond Bane, just because I think he's really smart with the ball in his hands. He makes good decisions, and he was really the only guy that TCU had down the stretch of games to make big shots for them and showed the ability to do it off the dribble. And so I think when you're looking at a shot creator in terms of creating for yourself, he's another good one. And then another one that I think is going to be really good creating for others is Malachi Flynn from San Diego State. I think he's a terrific PNR player, potentially maybe even the best PNR player in the draft, who just is really, really good when he gets going downhill, flying around a screen, finding shooters or making pocket passes. I like him a lot. And then obviously Tyrell Terry from Stanford. I think that he's probably going to struggle a little bit in terms of his athleticism and getting around guys, but just in terms of getting the ball to shooters in their spots, especially in the pick and roll game, I think Ty's really going to succeed in open eyes, just because I think he's a vastly underrated passer who can make just about any type of pass that you need a point guard to make. And then obviously with his shooting, I think he'll have legitimate shot gravity right away that should allow him to use a good array of pump fakes and head fakes that he has. That should allow him to kind of negate some of the deficit that he'd have as an athlete to kind of get going downhill and create for other guys. So those are kind of the four guys that I really like. But if do you want a second round name here that I think is also going to be really good?
Throw him at me. I think Malachi Flynn has a chance to drop to the second round, and if he does, that was a really good call because he's moved into the 20s on my board, and he's just such a fun player. Like he would be Jordan McLaughlin plus,
he's not quite as athletic,
a better player than J-Mac. Yeah, but he's really smart and really does a lot of the right things on the floor, and a really good defender. Like he's very small, and that size will show a little bit at the NBA level, but he was a great defender and really just one of them really pesky guys, fights for everything. Like I love him. Who else have you got that you're kind of thinking of in the second round?
The other person that I was thinking of in the second round was Peyton Pritchard out of Oregon. He was primarily a scorer at Oregon, which I think was, he was a fantastic scorer. He's a wooden award watch list guy who really put Oregon on his back for the whole entire season. But he's so good with the ball in his hands. He's so smart, and has so many different good dribble moves that that allow him to kind of slither past and through through the defense, and is so good at making tough passes in the lane, as well as driving, you know, baseline and kicking out to guys, like we've kind of seen. You know, I think there was a highlight from Josh Okogie that we saw in the bubble where, you know, he drove baseline and made kind of a crazy pass, similar to what Jokic has done, and passed it more back above the break rather than to the corner. And Pritchard can make kind of those passes. You know, he's only 6'2", but he's got a 6'5" wingspan. And he's competitive as hell. He's a winner, and really made all those guys that he played with much better at Oregon. And a guy who I think is going to be a really good player in the NBA for a long time. I think if you're
he's got that old man game, Pritchard. Yeah. Like he never seems like he's going very fast, but he always ends up at any spot.
And he changes speeds really, really well. Which is really important, especially if you've got a really good handle. Because that I mean, look at Luka. I mean, he's not explosive, but he's got a really, really strong handle and changes pace really, really well. And he's proven, you know, better than anybody that that can work. I mean, obviously Luka's a lot bigger, but you know, if you don't have the athleticism, you've got to be creative. And Peyton Pritchard is certainly creative, and a guy who, you know, if you're looking to try and find the next Fred VanVleet in the draft, you know, Pritchard or Grant Riller are probably, you know, the two closest things that you can get to him, and they're both guys that I think are going to be a lot of fun to watch in the NBA.
Grant Riller. I don't know how I forgot Grant Riller when we're talking about shot creators, because he's maybe even the best in the whole draft. Like, just the ability to find his spot and those step backs either way. He's really fun, Grant Riller. He's a guy who I definitely would have no problems with taking at 17 and just, you know, running with it, because I think he'll be a really good NBA player. Just so good around the rim. He's going to be a bad defender, but as a bench scorer, I think Grant Riller might be the best. You know, in 5 years, we're looking at guys who are still coming off the bench, but are giving you sixth man type output. I think Grant Riller will be the top of that.
I would be so interested to see what he would look like, where he'd be on boards if he wasn't 23. Like, if Grant Riller was 20 or 21, I think he'd be a top 10 player in the draft easily.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
So,
and if he played, in a different school, I still think he would have been. His numbers might not have been as prolific, but like the skill set wouldn't have changed too much, like on film. I think if Grant Riller was at Kentucky and 21, he'd be a top 5 pick.
Yeah, I think too, the small school bias, I think, is certainly real.
Yeah, So I think we'll leave that there. I'm sure we'll talk more about the draft as we lead into it. There's not that long left. I think it's November 18th, so. About a month and a half before we can actually see what Minnesota do on draft night. But for now, there's the NBA Finals on. Obviously, the biggest talking point in basketball at the moment. What's stood out to you? I know you obviously been watching really closely, and you've been great with all your analysis throughout the whole final, the whole playoff series. So, like, I want to know what you've seen in the in the finals, what's intrigued you, what you've kind of thought Minnesota should be doing this, or Minnesota needs to take that from here. Like, what stood out to you in the Lakers Heat series?
So what stood out to me the most is that having an elite big man, I think, really gives you a ginormous advantage in the playoffs. Because there's so few teams that have really good interior defenders that can stop guys without fouling and keep guys off the glass. So I've seen the Lakers use Anthony Davis much more in the high post. Especially, I mean, you've seen it especially against the Heat zone. He does such a good job of making quick decisions with the ball in his hand, whether it be to attack or kick back to somebody else or find shooters in the corner. It's really just kind of, you know, screamed at me that the Cat's really got to take another step forward as a passer. He did so last year. He made a bunch of great improvements with his vision and his passing and the types of reads that he was looking for. And I think hopefully surrounding Cat with more shooters or better shooting this year will allow that offense to just kind of take take the next step. And if they want to win playoff games, I think using Kat in as many ways as they possibly can, just like the Lakers are doing with Anthony Davis, I think that's something that's going to have to happen in the regular season if the Timberwolves want to be competitive. Another thing that I've noticed is that you can get away with having, you know, poor on-ball defenders if you're able to play a zone and you have smart team defenders.
I wanted to mention the zone because there's been so much zone throughout the whole playoffs.
I think junking up the game and taking other teams out of the rhythm, especially when they've got, you know, ball handlers that can just pick and roll you to death, whether it be Giannis or LeBron or a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, who is really, really good for Indiana. The Heat have just done a great job junking up the game, and we saw Ryan Saunders turn a little bit more to zone, especially after the trade deadline last year, and I think that had a lot to do with the fact that they didn't really have much practice time to implement defensive schemes and concepts. But I think it's also a great way to practice communication and tagging and just overall team defense. And I think that's something that the Wolves are going to have to do because they don't have the individual defenders, especially with a guy like D'Angelo Russell, to make an impact. And you've seen kind of Miami put length at the top of the zone with Jimmy Butler and Andre Iguodala, which I think is another thing.
Yeah, and then keep the guards kind of at the back of the zone.
Yep.
Which it's a really fun wrinkle to think about in terms of Minnesota.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting because you have a guy like Josh Okogie, you could absolutely play the tip there, and then you could put, you know, a guy like Kat out there, and that's a scenario where I think if Jarrett Culver and Josh Okogie's shooting has improved to the point where you can play both of them out there together, where it would be fun to see how they would kind of play together in a situation like that, because I think both of them would be good. And then another guy you should keep an eye on too, if the Wolves play more zone, is Jalen Nowell, because Jalen Nowell played for Mike Hopkins at Washington, and they almost exclusively run a zone, a trapping zone at that.
And they were really good defensively that year as well.
Jalen Nowell, was he a defense? Was he all defense at Washington?
I think he might have been, and he was alongside Thibault as well, wasn't he, in that defense? I think.
Yeah, he. I'm gonna look this up. Yeah, because I'm curious. Yeah, he.
Yeah.
No,
because they were really good. They were really good defensively as a team, though, and they like you said, they almost exclusively played zone. So it's an easy kind of plug and play scenario with him, and I think it's just zone is just a system where you don't have to think as much, which I think is good for Towns. When he starts to overthink things, that's when he becomes a bit reachy and he gets caught in between positions when he's trying to do too much. Whereas the zone, it kind of simplifies his role even more than a drop scheme does. And then Russell will have to kind of play between two guys, but you don't have to play on ball. The strength deficiency that D'Angelo Russell has over some of these guards isn't as pronounced in the zone. Like, I think it's something that they really should be running every game. Not exclusively by any means. You still need to have a really solid pick and roll coverage because that's the NBA. Like, you can't run a zone 24/7 and expect to win a lot of games. But like you said, you junk up the game, you know, throw different looks at teams rather than just letting Towns drop in the pick and roll and them just kill you with it every time. I think just throwing different things out there, it will be a really important thing. And I expect them to do it as well.
Yeah, it makes me really excited, too, to think about how Jared Vanderbilt might get deployed as well. Because if you're able to selectively throw him out there to just play really smart defense and utilize his athleticism and space on defense, I think that would be something that's pretty incredible, a pretty incredible development if he's able to give you good minutes on defense. So that's just those are a couple things that I've noticed that I think could immediately translate. But then the other thing too is the way that the Lakers use Anthony Davis, really as a screener, as like a screener who then turns into a shooter as part of an action, which I think are interesting. Something that I've seen the Lakers do and I've taken note of is the Lakers will run a play where they kind of have a double so stagger screen for a shooter coming off the corner. So like it's KCP, right? But what'll happen is instead of having KCP fly around, we'll have KCP stop like right where Davis is, and then screen Davis's guy and kind of tighten up with the other screener. So it's been Caruso in some instances. In other instances, it's been Dwight Howard. And they kind of almost elevator doors it on the wing for Davis to get a wide open look from three. And I think that's something that would be really interesting to do if you're Minnesota, just because you can get Malik Beasley on like a side pin down or a side curl or a double stagger like that. And either get him going to the lane or have Kat slip and go to the basket, or have like a Jake Lehman slip and go to the basket. Or you can have Kat pop out, or just have turn that then into a pick and roll and have like Malik Beasley operate in the pick and roll. I don't know. There's just so many things that you can do creatively with a side ball screen. A side screen either with the ball or without the ball is what I should say.
Yeah. And I don't think Saunders did that enough last year. I don't think he ran enough plays. Like, obviously Towns had his best season yet as a shooter, and he was really, really good, like we all know that. But I think that there's more wrinkles that can be ran rather than top of the key trailing three, or like the little fake pin down that they run where he kind of goes to set the pin down and then just takes a step back and kind of feigns the pin down and shoots the three. Like, I think you can run Towns off pin downs himself coming through from the baseline. Like, you can run the elevator doors, like you were just kind of saying, like run kind of variations of the elevator doors. Like, Towns is the best shooting big man on the planet, and like you need to leverage the fuck out of that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is the Lakers also run a good amount of flex screens, which, and for people, if you don't know what that is, an option of or flex screens all often have multiple options. And so the best example I can give of that is a team going 1-4 high low. So there's one guy at the top of the key. In this case, it would probably be Russell. Then you have four guys spread out kind of along the baseline. And let's say that you have two guys at the block, two guys in the corners, right? So what the Lakers have done is they've had Anthony Davis screen the guy in the corner, and Anthony Davis is facing the baseline, and so you'll have Caruso then fly around the screen cutting to the basket. And because Anthony Davis, they respect his shooting ability so much, it pulls Anthony Davis's primary defender further away from the basket and allows Caruso to have more space to catch the ball and then go up and finish. So I think Kat would be awesome with that, especially if you're playing with a guy like Jake Lehman who has said publicly that he has the green light to cut whenever he wants, which in my opinion just shows the trust that the team and the coaching staff has in him as a cutter, and shows his viability as a cutter.
And he's really quick over short distances as well. Yeah. Like, and
he's
big.
A great finisher around the rim too. So so I think using kind of more actions like that, I think would be a lot of fun, essentially just to kind of allow Towns' shot gravity to make the game easier for everybody else, but also to kind of use for him to kind of like have him utilize that gravity to make better reads, if that makes sense. Like, the pressure that he puts on the defense and how far he pulls guys away from the basket should simplify reads for him and should allow more guys to cut. But the problem with the Wolves over the last 2 years is they haven't had enough guys who can cut. And so my thing is, if you're not going to draft a guy who is an immediate plus shooter in the draft, you absolutely have to get a guy that can put pressure on the defense in a different way. Whether it be Killian Hayes, you know, running the twos, or his shot creation, or what have you, or like in Okoro that can just pressure the hell out of the defense with cutting and attacking the basket, are just things that absolutely need to be on this Wolves roster. And you know, who knows? Maybe Jared Culver and Josh Kogi have both improved as slashers and have better hands. But
yeah, because Josh is a really good cutter, like, but he can't do anything off the catch really with the ball in his hands. Like,
yeah.
But without the ball, you know, he was on that team, that pre-deadline team that had no shooting, he was pretty much the only pressure valve for Towns when he was in the post, because Josh was the only one who would dive to the rim. But like you said, and I completely agree, like, you need, if you cannot shoot, you need to do that often. And Culver needs to get a lot better at that, because that, you know, if you can get yourself downhill and catch and rise, like, that's an easy way to get points and an easy way to put pressure on the rim. I completely agree.
How many players do the Miami Heat have that can get their own?
And they just don't stop moving at all, Miami. Like, their offense is so impressive.
How many players do they have that can go get a bucket on their own? Two?
Yeah, like,
two?
Not...
They have Jimmy,
yeah, not
and
a lot.
Tyler,
like,
Hero?
Crowder.
Goran Dragic, so three?
Yeah, Crowder won't do it. Like, Duncan Robinson doesn't do it. I don't think he's shot a shot at the rim for, you know, the entire season, like... Bam can't do it from the perimeter, really. Like, he can handle the ball well for a center, but he's not going to break someone down off the dribble. Like, yeah, like, they've got their shot creators, which are extra important for them, because they need those ball handlers and creators to do a lot of work. But then the rest of the guys just move all game. Like, Duncan Robinson running off doubles, triple screens, like, you know, re-screens and into, like, that handoff into pick and roll action. Like, that, I don't know why they can't, like, Timberwolves can't do that with Malik Beasley and Karl Anthony Towns. Like, that's the stuff that they should be taking from the finals and really implementing in their own games.
Yep, it's just they constantly get open shots because people are always moving. And if Jalen Noel is able to provide some more minutes for them this year, just given, you know, how good he is without the ball in his hands and how good he is curling off the screens and shooting away from the ball, you know, he could be a guy that I think will be a monster, sneaky monster piece for the Wolves once he is ready to go at the NBA level or able to somehow translate the 44% on 7 attempts he shot in the G League to consistent NBA production from 3.
Yeah, like, he was nutty. He was, like, really, really, really good.
He was,
like,
arguably the best shooter in the G League.
Yeah, like, obviously a lot of NBA guys and draftees go to the G League and play really well, but, like, yeah, like, he was an all-time shooter in the G League. That's how good he was this season. So, like, I don't believe the 3 for 26 or whatever he shot at the NBA level will ever, you know, be what he is in general.
Yeah, what was he here? He was 3 of 26. Good God.
Yeah, like...
Him and Keelan, dude. They just, once they see, like, a couple go in, it's just going to be bombs away, I think.
Yeah. So the last thing, the one thing I wanted to talk about, which is a bit more simplistic, I guess, than schemes and stuff, which I love to talk about, but I think that the one thing that will excite a lot of people, a lot of Wolves fans, and that we should really keep an eye on is just the fact that the Lakers are right now dominating a very good team by playing two legitimate bigs. Like, obviously Anthony Davis can do a lot on the floor, and he's not, you know, your simplistic Clint Capella, Dwight Howard kind of big, but, like, Dwight Howard's next to him, and it's a copycat league, and the trends always shift to what the champions did to make themselves champions. And besides having LeBron and AD, like, the willingness to play Dwight Howard, who's at the moment nothing more than a rim runner and a fairly inconsistent rim protector. Like, he obviously is still pretty good and really strong, but, like, he has these moments where he's not in position and whatnot. Like, the willingness to have him on the floor for heavy minutes and have actual tangible success, that should be some wind in the sails for proponents of Minnesota pairing Towns with another big who covers his weaknesses defensively and lives at the rim on offense. Like, I'm not sure who that guy is. Like, is it Onyeka Okongwu? Like, is it a cheap free agent, like a, you know, Mason Plumlee or someone like of that ilk? Or whether they just, you know, refuse to entertain the idea at all. But I think it's definitely a step away from the ultra small ball kind of era that we'd been in, and something that really should be worth keeping an eye on for the front office and for fans.
And
as
I thought it was interesting too that Ryan Saunders mentioned multiple times, not that they wanted to emulate what Houston was doing, but that they wanted to emulate more of what Toronto was doing. And I thought that was really fascinating just because Toronto is so creative with how they use two bigs. Because, I mean, the three bigs that they mainly carried were Boucher, Gasol, and Ibaka. All three of whom could potentially not be back with them next season. Gasol is reportedly going back home to Spain. Shout out to him if that's it for him at an NBA on the NBA level. Big shout out to Marc Gasol. So happy for him. But a guy like Chris Boucher, I think, is intriguing just because he's shown the ability to step out and shoot the three, and he's crazy athletic on the backside trying to block shots. And I think if you want to really empower Cat, I think you want to kind of get him to defend guys away from the rim as well, and really have that backside defender there. And the Wolves have never really had a backside defender. I mean, Rocco was there as a backside defender some too, which is great, but he's just not quite the shot blocker that a guy like Boucher could be, just because Boucher...
Yeah, and he doesn't have that size to really be an intimidator.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but when you're looking at a guy like Chris Boucher, and he's got a 7'4" wingspan, and he's really athletic, I think that's something that intrigues me. But yeah, the two bigs thing is definitely something that's going to have to happen. It's just a matter of kind of who that big is. Like, it's unfortunate that there just aren't really that many out there right now for the Wolves to try and go get. I think it'd be interesting if they got a guy like Jared Allen, just because he's such a good shot blocker and interior presence defensively. Really not all that expensive. And I think you could see, interior shot blockers like that become a little bit more expensive, just because we're seeing the value that interior shot blocking has, especially with these two teams in the finals, with Bam and a guy like Dwight Howard, just making things way easier for the guards there and allowing them to be more aggressive, which I think is great. But a guy like Jared Allen, he's like still on his rookie contract. So 4 years, $10 million, and he's got next year, he's in there for $3.9 million, and then he's got a qualifying offer the following year. So I think that, looking at a guy like him, I think he's going to be a casualty from what's going on there in Brooklyn. Could be an easy guy to swoop up, but my three biggest things for a big that the Wolves are going to potentially get to play two bigs with Cat are, one, they have to be able to defend the interior and defend the backside and communicate really well.
Yeah.
Again, that Jared Allen's familiarity with D'Angelo Russell, I think, would be huge, because he's shown the ability to help prevent those lineups from getting killed while also being on the floor with D'Lo. And then three, they've got to be able to be P&R threats, because you could use Cat as a short roll passer and then hit that second big, or you can have Cat posted up in the corner and have him used as a spot up shooter. Or like we said, maybe it's a P&R, and then while a P&R is going on, you also have a secondary action of elevator doors for Cat or something like that while a guy like Allen is rolling to the rim or something like that. I just think it would be so hard to guard the Wolves like that on three levels, whether it be Cat at the 3-point line, D'Lo in the mid range, and then a big down low in the paint with the defense all pulled out. I just think when you have a guy like Cat whose shot gravity is so legit and insane for a center, you have to be able to put a second big in there to put pressure on the rim so you can fully utilize Cat, as a guy that can just make life easier for everybody and open things up at all three levels of the defense.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think at some point they will. I think this season, that the way they're talking about it, obviously that they're going to talk up all their guys, but I think they might give Jared Vanderbilt a chance to be, not the starter, but to get minutes with Towns here and there off the bench. Like, I think unless they can acquire a free agent who's a four, or, someone as a trade partner who brings back a four, I think that Vanderbilt will get some minutes as a four. I don't think they're going to re-sign Wancho. And if they do, I think it'll be...
They should.
in a lesser role. Like, they really shouldn't. Like, he's the fit is atrocious at the moment. Like, he can shoot, but he doesn't do much else. And we don't need to get into that because we've run a while for now. But yeah, I think two bids is something to definitely keep an eye on, and more of a possibility than it was, you know, a month or two ago, because the Lakers are probably going to win the championship starting two legitimate centers.
Yeah. Would you trade 17 and 33 for Jared Allen? Like 17, 33 and like Spellman for Jared Allen?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think Brooklyn...
Even if you don't want to play two bigs, like, he can... If you want to put him as a backup, do you know what I mean? Like, if you didn't get him for that, you can do what you want with him. And I think they should start him. But, like, he's a good player, and he's better than any center on the roster not named Carl Anthony Towns. So,
he's better than any center in free agency, no-brainer. Too. That's going to be able to legitimately he's going to be better than any guy they can take in the draft. My thing is, at 17, I worry that, you know, any impact big guy isn't going to be there. Like, I don't think Patrick Williams is going to be there.
I think Jalen Smith might be the one that's probably
there. Yeah, I don't think Precious Achiuwa is going to be there either at 17. I mean, the other guys you start thinking of are, like, Xavier Tillman, but he's more of a facilitating big rather than, like, a defensive stalwart. And then... You know, you're looking at a guy like Jalen Smith, I think Jalen Smith could end up being a really good player.
But I think the idea of him is better than the actual product of him right now. He's a shot blocking 3-point shooting big, but he's not really great at anything.
But again, what have we seen Gerst do? We've seen Gerst go out and try and get these guys who are restricted free agents who they can retain their rights to, and if that guy plays really, really well, then, you know, they can sign and trade that guy. And you know, Jared Allen is going to be a restricted free agent after next season. So maybe it's just like a one-year tryout and they bring him back if it works. And if they doesn't, then you can probably ship him out for a late first-round pick or, you know, another type of guy that you can bring in to be valuable. I think that's a really low... I mean, trading 17, I think, would be a really low-risk bet for a guy like Jared Allen.
Yeah, especially when you have the first pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not like
you've moved all your draft capital. Like, you still have the most valuable draft pick that there is. So, moving 17 to 33, like, if you walk out on draft night and that's the only trade you make, if you walk out of draft night with Jared Allen and the Anthony Edwards, like, I think you've done it okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that instantly raises the Timberwolves ceiling quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, If the Timberwolves do end up keeping the number one pick and trade, maybe they trade the number one pick if he plays really well at the next deadline to try and get, you know, a guy who wants out or something like that, it'd be interesting. But I mean, if you had a guy like Jared Allen, and let's say the Wolves end up getting a Ben Simmons somehow, and you're able to put out a lineup that has D'Angelo Russell, you know, Ben Simmons, Karl Anthony Towns, and Jared Allen. Like, that's
a squad.
That's a squad, dude. Like, that, I mean, yeah, you can talk about spacing problems, but, yeah, I mean, then if you are able to, you know, maybe Jalen Noel is a good shooter. Maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe Ben Simmons, you know, is able to make life easier for shooting on the outside, too. I mean, I just think that lineup would be so interesting and is something that I think is relatively feasible if you're Minnesota. Like, I don't think it's going to take much to try and get a guy like Jared Allen out of Brooklyn, just because I don't think he fits there necessarily with what they want to do, and there are already trade speculation with Brooklyn trying to trade him and Dinwiddie to New Orleans for Jrue Holiday. I mean, it just fits the MO of kind of what Gerson and Gupta are kind of all about in terms of trying to acquire these low risk guys that have the potential to really move the needle for you. That is what Allen is. So,
yeah, well, we'll leave it at that for today. I think that was, there's a lot of things that we kind of powered through there, a lot to unpack, but I thought that was really good. I thought that, I think that, those things, especially in the finals, are things that we should look out for. The way they use Davis, the two big men, and especially, like you said, that there was a really good point, the movement offensively from both teams, but mainly the way that Miami really powerhouse, run a powerhouse offense through movement. So yeah, we'll leave it at that. As usual, you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow Jack at JRBorman13. And yeah, thanks again for coming on, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Always a pleasure, and I hope things are going well down there.
Yeah, yeah, they're improving. So still in lockdown, but we're getting by over here.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll see everyone. I'm sure we'll have Jack on in the next few weeks again, and I'll see everyone else soon. Like, rate, comment, subscribe, all that stuff. And yeah, I'll see you guys next week. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, man.